Hey, I'm Cody from Unqualified Gamers, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians. Right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to this little video newspaper we like to call the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer, the chief editor. My friends call me SP, and your reporters for this second episode of Season 5 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
How's the leg?
And Michelle.
Robin Hood needs his band of merry men.
This podcast is recorded on Thursday, October 13th, live on Geeks.live. So, we are definitely sticking to the fact that we're all comic enthusiasts, right, Chris?
That's true. While I may not have picked up my books from my local store in 3 weeks, I have bought way too much on Comixology on sale.
I won't tell you how much I spent at my local comic book store yesterday. That was way too much. And Michelle!
I broke down and actually bought a comic book box, but my local shop had the one that's Deadpool. So I have a Deadpool comic book box.
Is it a short box or a long box?
It's a short box. I can't believe I bought a short box.
I'm going to shame you because I not only bought more short boxes, but I bought the drawer sleeves for the short boxes so I can actually just pull them out versus pull the top off. So that is what I'm working on. I meant to send you guys a picture. I just haven't yet.
Well, if you want to feel real shamed, Anthony has something like 50 long boxes, I think. That might be a slight exaggeration, but it's a big number.
And I think my first cabinet wood making excursion is going to be an actual wood furniture with drawers and stuff, maybe a cedar chest or something. But I digress. We're all comic book enthusiasts. Tonight, we'll be discussing the week's episode of Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past that could impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and Constantine. I'm sorry for you. Constantine fans. We're not going to have any Constantine spoilers.
You just keep taking that arrow and just twisting my heart. Stop it.
Well, at least I'm talking about it so that it's possible that CW can actually bring it back when Matt Bryan's available. So we'll see.
We might have a news story on that later, but just a reminder, everyone, our speculations probably include a lot of information that showrunners and actors have shared in various interviews and articles been published online. So even if we're throwing out wild speculations, we might accidentally be right once in a while. So consider this your spoiler warning for accidental spoilers on top of, you know, spoilers about this week's episode.
And speaking of spoilers, sometimes we geek out and talk about this week's DC Comics like we just did. So every once in a while, there could be a comic book spoiler, but we'll promise we'll try our best not to ruin anything for you.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at www.gonnageek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Thank you, guys. Tell you what, Chris, why don't you take this time, since Neil's not here, and break the current episode down for us?
I'm the new Neil, guys. I'm the new Neil, and this week we're going to be talking about Season 5, Episode 2 of Arrow, entitled The Recruits, air date being Wednesday, October 12th, 2016, directed by one of our favorites, James Bam Bam Bamford. I was so excited that he was back. You might remember him as the stunt coordinator turned director for Arrow. He's directed 5 episodes of Arrow, including last week's Brotherhood and one of our favorites, Code of Silence. And he's directed to also direct episode 8 of this upcoming season as well. So he's going to be really busy. Let's talk about the writers. Another group of our favorites here. Back again, Speedweed, of course.
Speedweed!
Yeah, we love Speedweed. He's written 5 episodes of Arrow, 7 of Haven, and he has been a co-executive producer on Arrow 23 times. So almost a full season's worth. Actually, that probably is a full season's worth of Arrow, in which he's been co-executive producer. Rounding out our writer credits, Beth Schwartz, who we know has been on 18 different episodes of Arrow, 2 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, and much like Speedweed, 23 co-executive producer credits for Arrow. So it might not be the dream team of Berlanti and Guggenheim, but it's a damn good number two team, that's for sure.
It's the A team. I mean, if the Berlanti team is the dream team, this is definitely the A team. Love having these guys, Bam Bam, Speedweed, and Beth. Definitely is the dream team of Berlanti, but this is the A team with Bam Bam, Speedweed, and Beth.
And I'm totally okay with what we've got right now. It's an awesome lineup. Keep them coming, guys. Keep them coming. But that does kind of wrap up what we've got as our brief introduction to this week's episode, The Recruits. Maybe it's time to start talking the overall theme of things. I mean, it's pretty obvious what one of the main themes is. Guys, Ollie's building a team, if we hadn't noticed.
He's trying to build a team.
He's not doing so good at it either.
Not in the beginning.
It takes him a while to warm up, you know. It took him 5 years to get where he's at with being the Green Arrow, and then another 5 years to be good trainer. He's lost some of his trainees along the way. Look at Thea, no longer a superhero. Look at Diggle, who is having his own issues. And look at Laurel. So, I mean, his track record isn't exactly stellar, so he's still working on it.
He'll get better one day, maybe?
Well, I would argue that he got better by the end of the episode, thanks to Felicity. And I can't believe I just said that sentence.
Do you need some hand sanitizer?
Actually, I have some right over here. But this is the one thing that I noticed. I really liked Felicity and Oliver's interaction this episode. Like, this is the Olicity I like, where she is standing up to him and she's telling him like it is, and he has to go, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they're not pining for each other.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes with those two, though, is that Ollie will go his own course, get absolutely lambasted, be completely wrong, and then finally he'll listen to Felicity or whoever it is, Diggle or whatever. See, Felicity's actually transitioning into like part Diggle, part Felicity, part, I don't want to say girlfriend, but there's that like best friend sort of thing that's still there with them, you know?
Yes.
So they're transitioning, and Oliver's always had that, and he doesn't have that with anybody else but Felicity. Even Curtis can't really fill that role because he's a trainee. He's not a mentor. So it just doesn't work the reverse. Not at the beginning, anyway.
Well, everyone's just basically abandoned him, even Felicity to some extent, even though she's still there. So he's still kind of grappling with that, and he kind of touches on that at the end, that he's not mean to the recruits because, or hard on the recruits because of fear of the team breaking up. He's afraid of them getting close to him, basically, and then leaving him, not necessarily the team. I don't know if that made sense.
I was having a little bit of problem at the very beginning, really digesting what his issues were and like the trust issues and whatever. They were saying, we don't trust you. Well, I don't care if you don't trust him. You agreed to come, so you do whatever he says to do for a time period. And 2 hours, 2 training sessions, I'm sorry, that's not it. You have to go longer than that. So that was a little bit if. But then when Curtis came in, not just Felicity, but when Curtis came in and said, we don't trust you because here are your problems, and listed out, you know, you're too egocentric maniac or whatever, and you don't trust anybody. And he went down that list of about 5 things. I don't remember everything he said, but I'm like, okay, now I get where they were going, but they took a really sketchy road to get there. That's just my opinion.
Well, he's certainly no Batman, because someone would be like, I need to know who you are. And he'd basically be like, no, leave.
I know.
The secret identity, man, it's kind of a big deal when it comes to protecting everyone around you. And I understand the reason he gives up his secret identity, but at the same time, they play it real fast and loose with Ollie's secret identity in this show, and it's starting to happen again. And from a paranoid person's standpoint, when it comes to superheroes, it's like, why are you doing this? Now more people know who you are. There's more chance that one of these guys is going to break and reveal your identity, and someone else you love is going to die.
Die.
Well, that's part of being on Team Arrow.
Right.
Go check out that statue of Laurel down by the wharf.
We got 4 mentions of Laurel. Last week, it was 12-ish. This week they dialed it down to 4.
It was only slightly ham-fisted this time around.
I know. I actually kept track, and it was like, oh my God, they said it again and again. It was like, oh no.
You know, I gave them the first one. I was like, okay, it sort of makes sense. And then they just started hammering it again. I just kind of rolled my eyes and went, ah, here we go. Let's keep bringing it up, even if it doesn't naturally fit into the conversation sometimes. But I'm biased, remember.
You're biased for Laurel. You want her back.
Yes, I love Laurel. She is my favorite character ever, ever, ever on Arrow.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Diggle. What's going on with him out in the soup?
He's getting screwed over. That's what's happening.
hard by that general. It's a general officer, isn't it? It seemed like it to me anyway.
I believe so. I did not notice the rank on his shoulders.
It's like, okay, normally I'd stick around and I'd like fight all the terrorists. I'd fight the good fight. I'd protect my country. But we just had every single nuke go off a few months ago. So there's that. There's magic going on. There's metahumans. Yeah, I'm going to be rich until somebody destroys the world. That's an interesting tidbit on society right now, because they've got a lot of issues going on with the superheroes and the supervillains. And this is how a normal person would react.
Right. And I did like the fact that the general even brought up magic at this point in time. Damian Dark and things like magic. And I was like, oh, wow, it is actually being acknowledged instead of kind of swept under the rug like we thought it might happen. They were like, we want to go back to more of the street level sides of things. Both Ollie and that general brought up magic this week. So it stays and people acknowledge it, even though they might not experience it much.
That whole Genesis Day really went through the entire episode. It just wasn't Diggle and his team having to find the illegal tech that's tied to Genesis Day. You know, we saw Felicity having to deal with it with Ragman, the introduction with Ragman. And then the what seems to be like the good company, Ameritech, coming in to help with that clinic, well, finds out that they helped build one of the nukes. And so I thought that was really interesting how they tied in the events from last season into the beginning of this one.
It keeps that continuity going. It gives us a reason for Felicity to continue to feel guilt over that event. Because I don't remember who had commented. Well, I believe it was you that commented in the first episode, Michelle, that Felicity just doesn't really seem like she's thinking too much about the fact that she nuked a city to save everyone else.
It didn't seem like it had hit her, but now, you know, when she was watching them and she was hearing that, you could see, and it was like, oh, there it is. There's her guilt train. It's leaving the station.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to get even worse when Diggle comes back in some way, shape, or form, and they find out he ran into troubles because, oh, he was trying to get one of those nuclear devices back from that day.
I know, poor Diggle. I thought it was interesting how he was like, I wanted to get away from it all and be part of a chain of command and not have to really worry about things. And now he's like, oh, I have to worry about bad guys that are supposed to be good guys. And now I'm tied to a post.
So do you guys think that the storylines are going to intertwine, or do you think Diggle's story is going to be completely separate for the rest of the season?
Based off of set photos we've seen where he's back in his Spartan costume, I'm guessing he's coming back.
Spoilers, but good enough to know he will be coming back one way or the other. So that's pretty cool.
These were officially released photos, too, of the new Spartan helmet.
There are purists out there, Chris, who won't even see the promo for the next week until the episode comes out.
I will reference you back to our spoiler warning.
Yeah, and we talked about it like news. Last week?
That's true. We did do that last week.
Fair enough, guys. I was just pointing it out. There is one thing about Diggle that I want to point out. When they first go in to get the nuclear trigger with the new guy who is scared and ultimately gets hammered down by the general pretty hard with Diggle's gun.
Our token red shirt, you mean?
Pretty much. As they're going in, watch that scene again. Diggle throws the grenade, and just by throwing the grenade, the ceiling of the next room in comes down before the explosion. So go ahead, watch that scene again. You will see what I'm talking about. Diggle throws the grenade, and as he threw the grenade, the ceiling came down, and then there was the big flash explosion.
It's just magic, man. It's magic.
He's got the magic grenade throwing, doesn't he?
Exactly.
I've got a theory about Thea, by the way, and I don't know if it's going to happen in this year or maybe next year, but Oliver Queen is a terrible mayor. He's a great handshaker. He's a great guy to have as a figurehead, but all the work's being done by Thea behind the scenes. And I think that eventually, because the election's coming around, right? Or is he elected at this point, or is there still going to be an election?
I believe he's still serving out the remainder of the previous mayor's term.
Yeah, so there's going to be an election coming up. Thea actually could run for mayor and be legitimate mayor.
You did hear Lance say maybe it's the wrong queen who's mayor or something to that effect.
Yeah, he said, I think the wrong queen ran for mayor.
And then I was thinking about how she has actually successfully run a bar. She's done a lot of successful things that Oliver has just failed. Oliver's a good superhero. Oliver's a good arrow. He is terrible at running absolutely anything else.
Well, to be fair, though, she's only had to single task on those things. Whenever Oliver was trying to do, like, be the mayor, he's also being a superhero. When she's being chief of staff, she's not being a superhero anymore. When she was running the bar, I don't believe she was a superhero until the bar closed.
Correct.
Yeah, so she's been lucky enough to only have to focus on one major thing, whereas Oliver's got to focus on being the Green Arrow, managing a team, and then trying to maintain some semblance of his personal life in regards to business.
But Oliver says, I believe, I'm a mayor who's got this side job as the Green Arrow. And then Thea counters with, well, no, you are the vigilante with the side job of being mayor.
And it's accurate.
Yeah.
It's very much accurate because he sees himself as the Green Arrow first. He's much like Bruce Wayne, Batman in this regard. Bruce Wayne doesn't see himself as Bruce Wayne. He sees himself as Batman.
Yeah, you can always make the argument that he's choosing to be the Green Arrow at this point. You know, he does have this great position as mayor to do things, but it's been only, what, like 5 months or something? And already he's just like, nah, this is like taking too long, being this mayor thing. You know, I think I'll just slip back into being the superhero. That's what I'm good at.
Well, I mean, he says as much in episode one that he's using the mayoral position to give him intel. As the Green Arrow, basically. So for him, it's an ends to justify his means of being the Green Arrow. This helps me do my job as a superhero, so I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
So, Michelle, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Did Curtis's salmon ladder do it for you?
Oh, he was so cute. Oh, trying to do that. I was like, oh, look at Curtis. He's so sweet. And even though he's an Olympic athlete, well, former Olympic athlete, he, you know, just sort of shows you how difficult that salmon ladder is. I am disappointed that, yes, we got Ollie on the salmon ladder, but he was not shirtless, so it doesn't count.
Full suit and tie, mind you. That was the whole getup. And by the way, that's what poor Curtis, that's what every guy wants to hear. Oh, that's so cute, so sweet. Yeah. That's what the guys want to hear. Way to go. Way to bolster up a guy.
What's wrong with being cute and sweet?
When he's trying to do a salmon ladder, he wants to be buff. He wants to be the Ollie. He wants to take it. He wants to have that shirtless scene.
Well, I still think it's cute.
You know what else is cute on this episode? Wild Dog's code name.
He hates.
I love how he's continuing that thread of all he calls Thea Speedy and it sticks and she hates it. And you've got the same thing going on with Wild Dog here is Felicity gives him the nickname and it sticks with Oliver. So he just keeps calling it. And he's like, no, I don't like this. Stop it.
Question for you guys. When they were in the medical clinic event, somebody said, when do I get a code name? Who was that?
Oh, that's Sharp. They don't call her Artemis yet.
Oh, okay. So when do I get a code name?
Never.
Nobody says anything and they just move on to the next thing. So I didn't know that.
We just don't acknowledge it yet.
Guys, I have to apologize. I went into this series assuming that Tobias Church was Prometheus. I'm sorry. I was completely wrong.
They didn't have the right build, but I thought they might be connected somehow. And they obviously are not connected at the end when Prometheus is just like, you kill the Green Arrow, I kill you. And I was like, damn.
For a second, I thought it might be Malcolm, but now I think it's Dolph Lundgren underneath there.
No.
I don't think he's got the right build for that either.
See, I have a list of possibilities. And one of the names, I'm actually not going to joke about this right now. I know it probably started as a joke, but it's actually becoming a viable possibility that it is Tommy.
Tommy? That would be great. And why would Tommy go after Oliver, the Green Arrow?
Because he would have blamed him for like the Glades and everything and not had come in forward. And then maybe Tommy was alive and maybe he thought Ollie. And then there's Flashpoint and then there's stuff. So.
And let's remember, Tommy loves Laurel. Laurel died working with the Green Arrow.
Oh, there you go.
As a direct result of it. Remember, everything ties back to Laurel's death so far in season 5. That's the central linchpin on everything, is it has to reference that back. I'm not saying that facetiously, but that's been a primary point of the plot. So if you want to theorize it's Tommy, that's definitely a motivation for why he'd be like, I want to kill the Green Arrow, because A, he's responsible for my being dead. B, maybe you could say, I think he killed my dad. I don't think Tommy really cared about his dad that much in the end. But most importantly, because of him, Laurel died. He pulled Laurel into his insane crusade and got her killed.
Wow. That's cheap enough. And Tommy, the character, the actor that played Tommy, I can't remember his name for the life of me right now.
Colin Donnell?
Donald?
Colin Donnell, I think. Was that what it was?
Well, he's had 3.5 years to buff up, you know, so I think he could have fit in that costume.
And we did see him at a convention. I know we made the joke that it was to help him pay his mortgage.
Gotta pay the bills.
Oh, maybe it was a cover. I don't know. I mean, it would be a great reveal because they kept saying over and over and over that Oliver is directly responsible for the creation of Prometheus. And so we have to keep trying to figure out exactly who he could have pushed to this position of becoming Prometheus. And the list keeps getting shorter.
So I was with you on the whole Tommy thing, then I pulled up Colin Donnell's IMDb, and I saw that he has a regular role that would appear on Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, and Chicago Med as a doctor on there. So unless they're killing him off, IMDb has him out there until at least episode 7 of season 2 of Chicago Med right now.
Mm.
So he would appear to be gainfully employed on other stuff on a different network.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. We'll keep our eyes on it, of course, Prometheus, and see what happens.
It's not to say it won't end up being him, because the guy wears a full body mask right now. You could just have someone else in there until Colin Donnell's available to come in and do the unmasked scenes.
Talking about stunt dudes, Tobias Church, you know, when he was fighting Arrow, obviously not the actor, but they did it so well that you couldn't tell, that you couldn't really see from the face, but you could kind of see from the body style, because he's got a very distinct body style. And the stuntman was a little bit leaner, and they padded him up in order to look like him. But that fight in the, whatever that was, warehouse, parking garage at the end, that was amazing between those two.
I still want to see Tobias Church get into a fight and whip out a hammer and use that in some way. That's for all you Walking Dead fans.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't it?
Tyree, was that his character's name? Tyree?
He was Tyrese.
Tyrese, yeah. That would be cool. Okay, we haven't talked about Ragman yet. Michelle, tell us about Ragman.
Well, Ragman made his first appearance in this episode, and he was really after those Ameritech people. And at first, you know, they're like, well, gosh, who is this person? Maybe he's the bad guy. And then Felicity finds out that Ameritech's like going broke and that they're behind again the nuke for Genesis Day. And it's like, well, maybe he's not such the bad guy at all. And then we find out that he is the lone survivor from Haven Rock, that Felicity's feeling all guilty about that nuke. And his father wrapped him in rags that are over 2,000 years old, and it protected him from the fire. And now he's got magic rags.
What is this, like the Shroud of Turin?
No, it's supposed to be something else, but...
Yeah, I don't know much about Ragman, in all honesty, other than the fact I knew he was a character because I had a hero click of Ragman back when I played that game, and I played with it once.
The character is really interesting in this show because we don't know who it is at first. We know who it is now. obviously somebody that's been in Haven Rock while it was being nuked. We know who nuked Haven Rock. We talked about it before. Felicity made a choice. It was either Haven Rock or a bigger city. I forget what the bigger city was. Say it was New York. I don't know if it was New York, but you know, given the choice between 5 to 10 million people and 20,000 people, I would probably make that choice too.
Yeah, no doubt.
And when this kid figures out that Felicity is the reason that everybody around him died, I think it's going to make a very interesting Team Arrow. I'll put Team Arrow in quotes. Team Arrow discovery, because if Ragman's going to be part of Team Arrow, he's definitely going to go anti-Ollie or anti-Felicity when he finds out.
I mean, let's also remember, Oliver kind of says, our fathers both want better for us. You don't have to be a murderer. Dude's already killed. He killed a Meritech random sales stock-talking dude earlier in the episode, so he's also a killer.
Well, yeah, and Oliver's killing again, so... But I think since Oliver was able to talk Ragman down from killing the woman and to help him, so he took a gamble that actually Church wasn't going to... He wasn't in as much danger as we thought, because Arrow's on his back and Church is above him, and then he gets Ragman to help him. So perhaps because reason is starting to enter Ragman's mind and everything, maybe they can remind him that, yes, the nuke fell on Haven Rock, but it was really Dark that did all of this. You know, we can't forget that it was Dark who pushed the button.
Right. I did like the fact, though, also that kind of explained away why Ollie was getting his butt kicked by Church. Because, again, you go and look at how Oliver's skills have progressed. He's holding his own with, like, Damian Dark and Malcolm Merlyn, who are, like, martial arts masters. Tobias Church is a brawler. That's not to discount his skills, but they're not at the level of some of those other guys that Oliver has owned. Like, remember, Oliver beat Ra's al Ghul. Tobias Church should not be beating him in a fight.
Unless Tobias Church is that good.
No.
I doubt he has the martial arts experience, especially as they're talking his backstory where he grew up on the streets and has been taking over elements of the streets. I doubt he has the martial arts background that Oliver does, or anyone from the League of Shadows did that Oliver led. League of Assassins.
Maybe his stuntman does, though.
Okay, touche. I stand corrected. The stuntman might very well have that level of skill.
Oh, I think with Church, he's more like from the streets, and he's learned basically how to like put a beat down. Obviously, we saw that last week. But also, he has the brains to take over cities and have $100 million lying around.
Yeah, his criminal empire is doing good.
Who doesn't have $100 million laying around? I mean, it's just a chump change.
If someone does, they can send it my way, and I'll gladly spend it on good things.
Oliver used to. Wasn't that his little trust fund? I mean, he was a billionaire, but like $100 million was his like little trust fund, right?
I mean, they did make a point of saying just because he's not a billionaire doesn't mean he's not rich, so it very well could be. He's just down to like $200 million or some junk like
that. Where's he living right now? Because he lost the loft.
In his office? I don't know. I mean, and where'd his security go that he had last week? We didn't see any of those goons again either, because that was my concern, is he's sitting here trying to be a superhero and do his own thing and constantly having to ditch security.
Well, the security guys did show up at the clinic, and someone had to bring him his super suit.
He wore it under his regular suit.
No.
It was tailored just perfectly hide it.
Don't even.
That is right. So this is Apartment Watch 2016.
Dun dun.
All right. Keep your eyes peeled to find out where Oliver Queen is. He can always move in with Quentin. I mean, Quentin's got plenty of space. And, you know, we'll clear out some of those bottles. There's some place for him to sleep.
That would be the ultimate odd couple right there. Poor Quentin.
Oliver can't be rich anymore, because after the mansion burned down and stuff, Thea's the one that bought the apartment with Malcolm's money, because Oliver doesn't have any.
Oliver doesn't have any money from the Queens. You don't know what kind of Bradfa money he has.
He gets paid the same way Felicity does. Some way we don't know yet, basically. Because, again, Felicity, she's just hanging out in the cave. And I'm like, what do you do besides the Arrow tasks?
I mean, is everybody living off of Thea's Malcolm's money? Because somebody's got to be keeping the lights on in the Arrow cave.
It goes beyond Arrow, even, because I think Thea's money is keeping Star Labs open.
No. Barry just powers the power grid for them. They get money from the electric company. Just when he runs on that treadmill, that builds up energy they can sell as electricity, and that's how they're paying the bills. They sell back electricity to the power companies.
I'll buy that.
But good, because I totally pulled it out my ass.
But I don't know if that's enough money to buy enough food for him to power the treadmill.
Details.
I mean, at least, well, we know Barry's got a job. He still lives with, like, Joe and stuff, but he's got a job.
The job isn't enough to pay the property taxes on that huge super collider. I'm sorry. That thing has got to be racking up tons of property tax. It's got to be paid for somehow.
Maybe Cisco and Caitlin are working on other things, and then we just only see them when Barry comes around, and that's how they're paying the bills. They're working.
They've got a new supervillain or meta or whatever every week. They don't have time to work on anything else. They go out to Jitters in the morning for coffee, and then they go out to the club at night.
So I guess this is a flaw in the Berlantiverse, is how do people make money? So right now we know that Oliver and Thea are working for the city and they're getting paid that way. We know Thea's probably still has Merlin money. Barry's a CSI. Supergirl is now a reporter, and nobody really has enough to actually pay for the lifestyle of being a superhero.
Okay, I got it, guys. I got it. I'm sorry. It's Captain Rick Hunter. He goes back in time. He gets a bunch of collectibles. He brings it in the future, and then they pawn shop them. And then they go to the Pawn Stars, and they pay, they sell them off, and that's how they get their money.
So they get nickels on the dollar for all of the historic artifacts that Rip Hunter brings to the present.
Whatever works, man. Whatever keeps the lights on, whatever keeps food on the table.
I've seen plenty of these before, but they're like a dime a dozen. I'll give you like 7 cents. This is a 6th century helmet. Okay, I'll give you $25.
Where's the paper proof, man? It says 6 cents. They didn't have paper back then. Anyway, guys.
Freaking Pawn Stars.
Because I just took an Arrow podcast into Podstars. Michelle, what are we missing? What have you to talk about that we haven't covered yet?
You know, one of the things that was interesting in during the Oliver Ragman conversation, where they were like, you know, let's honor our fathers, let's be better. You know, they both died in order for us to be better than them. He mentioned that it was 10 years ago. And I'm like, I'm going, what? And then it was like, oh, yeah, because it's like it's season 5 for us. But he's lived those 5 years on the island and then 4 years off. So this is year 10 for him. That like hit me. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like he's been carrying all this stuff around for 10 years, a decade. That's some heavy stuff.
So he could become someone else, something else. He said the line, guys. He said the line earlier in the show, too.
I know.
Okay. I was thinking about that as well. And I go back to the moment that we discover him on the island at the beginning of season 1. So that's when the two worlds really collide, right? Because you've done the 5 years of flashback and then he's coming back. His 5 years that he was, quote unquote, on the island, that was really his college years, right? Because he had failed out of other college. I don't know how many years of college that he really had, but let's say he had like 1 or 2 years of college, maybe 3, then 5 years. So that's like a PhD. So that's like you come out, you're actually a full doctor or doctorate, and you start working a real life at that point in time. Now he's got 5 years of experience. So I think right now he would be on the cusp of having an international expert stamped on his sleeved arm or whatever. I think he's at that point where it has been that long since he's left high school. He's now the dude in charge, mayor and everything. I think it's actually believable. And Stephen Amell pulls it off.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Do you have anything, Chris, that we haven't talked about?
Flashback, Bratva, ringing the bell. How brutal was that?
It was very brutal.
These guys help you do it, and then we shoot them and kill them, and you get to learn a lesson.
There was no talk between the guy. You know, I watched it twice, and the second time I watched it, I was like, are they talking? Because when Oliver is walking back to the line, and he's like, well, okay, let's draw him to the left. one of us can reach the bell. It might not have been Oliver. And so I think they had a pre-existing pact that whoever rings the bell, they were going to shoot everybody else. So it didn't matter that they were working together or not. They were Anatoly and whoever was running that was like, okay, well, let's just take the one person.
Well, Anatoly basically said that, is that only the person that rings the bell was going to get shot in the end when Oliver's like, why? Why did this happen?
You smart. You use team to win. You intelligent. Brothva needs that.
Yes.
If he wasn't the one to ring the bell, though, if he was one of the one guys feigning to the left, he would have been shot.
But plot.
Well, no. That shows character development. It shows that Oliver has learned from the 4 years from Island, Hong Kong, Island, and stuff, to where he was able to formulate this plan and get them to work together in order to do this. I would not say that it's not just plot. Yes, we know he gets into the Bratva, but this shows, because this is exactly almost like the training he was doing with the recruits. On the line, ring the bell. And at first I'm like going, because when they cut back, I'm like, going, oh, wow, this is going to be intense and you're going to learn all this. And it's like, that's what ringing the bell means? Whoa.
Yeah, it's brutal.
I love the flashbacks, though. I just love it. They're probably the best that they have been since the end of season one, beginning of season two. They are that good.
That's fair.
Yeah, they mean something this time.
Yep. So is that it, Chris, Michelle? You guys all tapped out?
I'm tapping.
I'm good.
All right, Chris, you want to run us down what we're looking at next week?
Sure. Next week, we have the next episode entitled A Matter of Trust. This is episode 3 of season 5. It will be airing on Wednesday, October 9th, 2016. This is something they've been teasing for a little bit, but wrestling superstar Cody Rhodes is bringing the SmackDown to Star City. Now that Oliver has his new team, they're ready to hit the streets, but Oliver doesn't feel they are ready. Headstrong Wild Dog defies the Green Arrow's orders and sets out on his own after a new drug dealer, Derek Sampson, who is guest star Cody Rhodes, who is terrorizing Star City. Sampson proves more powerful than Wild Dog, and it is up to the Green Arrow to go head-to-head with Sampson to save his teammate. Gregory Smith directed the episode written by Ben Sokolowski and Emilio Ortega Aldrich. That's next week's episode.
These are also names that I remember from the past, so this should definitely be a good episode. So, for the new listener, what we do every week is we started off back in season one running down what we call the Bat Checklist. And this week, actually, Oliver is very Batman-esque, talking about the training of new recruits and stuff like that. But over the years, what we've done is we've included DC and pop culture Easter eggs. And then we found an article that basically runs this down. So we're going to run down this comicbook.com article that has the pop culture Easter egg. So Chris, you want to take the first one?
Sure. First thing we saw, one of our Easter eggs, we touched on it. Hey guys, the salmon ladder's back. We saw Curtis try to climb it, not do so great. And then Oliver just show him up in his suit and tie. And I know there was at least one person in my house went, he's supposed to take his shirt off for that.
Also of note, the salmon ladder is actually a thing, and it's not just created for the show. And I can vouch for that because I've looked at YouTube videos in the past, and you can actually make one out of 2x4s. So
American Ninja Warrior, man.
Yeah, I've considered doing that in the past. I just have not had time. Michelle, what is another thing that people might have missed in the episode?
Meritech. Even before they were the manufacturers of the Genesis Day missiles, Meritech were pretty sketchy characters. Meritech Industries is a weapons manufacturer, tech conglomerate, and defense contractor arguably best known for their biggest gun, the Toastmaster BG-80, designed by John Henry Irons. Their brutality turned him off weapons making, and he left Meritech to go into hiding, taking on the name of Henry Johnson. The guns would later make their way into the hands of street gangs in Metropolis and Washington, D.C. Seeing his weapons on the streets, coupled with the then recent death of his idol Superman, led Irons to take on the armored superhero identity of Steel.
Played a big part when Superman died in the early 90s. He was one of the four Supermen that took his place.
Yep. And played by Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, we try not to talk about that movie. He's so bad.
Chris, why don't you talk about Ragman instead?
So Ragman, like I said, I didn't know much about him beforehand. Then I started reading ahead in the show notes. In the show, Ragman's family was killed when the missile hit Haven Rock. In the comics, though, Ragman is a Gotham-based vigilante who wears the mystical suit of souls from which his powers originate. He was created by Robert Kniger and Joe Kubert. I'm sure I butchered your name, Robert. I apologize. Ragman has a bit of a Ghost Rider thing going on. His costume allows him to take the souls of the guilty, except that in the case of Ragman, he is then later able to summon their abilities in battle. But being used in this way, the evil can actually earn redemption and then passage to heaven. So that's a little bit about Ragman that I did not realize until I was reading this stuff in the pre-show. I went, huh, he's not just a dude that strangles people with his robes. Cool.
The CGI in that looked pretty cool, though, all the way from when he was accosting the vice president on the street till the final fight in the warehouse. That was just cool the way the regs are able to do that. So
most definitely
gonna be some good scenes with him for the rest of the season.
I have one other thing. It's not like an, I don't know if it, to me, it was kind of an Easter egg. When I saw this episode again, when they are on the roof, Arrow and Ragman, you see a sign where it says Bam Squared. And the director's name, he's James Bamford, but everybody calls him Bam Bam. And it's like Bam Squared. And it's like, oh, I see what you did there.
That's awesome. I love Bam Bam. And he's definitely making a name for himself on this. You guys ready to roll into some news?
News time. Oh, wrong show. Sorry.
And from the Starling Tribune newsroom, we have our Arrow news stories that we'll be leading off. Michelle, take us down the road first.
All righty. Supergirl and Arrow boss says Ollie and Kara won't get along.
Aw.
Darn. As per Andrew Kreisenberg regarding the crossover, part of Oliver's journey in those episodes is he's kind of hit his breaking point for things he's willing to accept. He's had Mercurius soldiers, the Lazarus Pit, Magic, and Damien Dark. But flying aliens who can incinerate you with their eyes is beyond the pale for him. He's keeping his distance, which is a very Oliver thing to do. Even Kara comments, does he not like me? Barry's like, no, that's kind of how he treats everybody.
Puts arrows in them.
In their knees or in their legs. They used to be an adventurer.
He shot Barry in the back twice.
That was to make him better.
He shot Roy.
And he shot, what's his name this week too?
Wild Dog, he shot in episode one.
I was thinking Ragman. I was like, no, that's not right. He didn't shoot Ragman. All right.
No, he did not. So next up, this is some pretty cool stuff coming out of New York Comic Con. We found out that Guillermo del Toro has an open invite to come direct Arrow if he ever wants to. But how'd this come about? Well, del Toro teamed up with Arrow executive producer Mark Guggenheim for the movie the animated series Trollhunters. Guggenheim was then asked at New York Comic Con if Del Toro might appear to do an episode of Arrow. Guggenheim said, I'd be lying if I said I'd never broached the topic with him. He's so busy and he's filming right now, actually up in Toronto. He's got a standing invitation, Guggenheim concluded. So how cool would that be if Guillermo Del Toro showed up to direct an episode of Arrow?
Guys, I got something for you. Over the week when I was doing the family stuff with my dad, I was talking to Michelle about this last night on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. My dad and I watched Guardians of the Galaxy, and I was going down who the actors were and where he might have seen them before and stuff. We get to the, what's it called? The caretaker or whatever, the collector. And dad's like, oh, I know who that is. That's Guillermo del Toro. I was like, really? Yeah. He's like, okay, you know the guy. He's like, yeah, I know who that is. I was like, oh, so that's cool. So my dad knew who he was.
But that's Benicio del Toro.
Yeah, true.
Different del Toro.
It was a good story anyway.
It is a good story. He was half right. As I play Dream Crusher. Sorry, guys, I suck.
It's all right. More Invasion news. Arrow's Wild Dog to feature in DC CW's Invasion crossover. Rick Gonzalez, who plays Wild Dog, tweeted out a picture of his mask with the Flash's mask, and it was later confirmed that Wild Dog will be in part of the crossover event.
Should be cool. I mean, I expect we're going to see most of Team Arrow 2.0 appearing in some capacity.
Shifting over to our general DC TV news desk, we have a few stories there. The first is low ratings. Chris, what do you got there?
We'll talk about this one first, and this is not me poo-pooing on this, but I wanted to bring it up for a discussion point. Ratings have been down a little bit for a lot of the shows, and there's possible reasons for that, but The Flash hit a series low rating last week. The latest episode of The Flash, which was episode 2 of season 3, Paradox, hit a series low of a 1.0 in the rating share and drew in 2.75 million viewers overall. The season did start off with a dip in ratings as the premiere averaged a 1.2 in the demographic and drew 3.1 million viewers, which is down from the 3.6 million in the season 2 premiere. So I, for one, don't think this is a consequence of the fact that, oh, we don't like Flash anymore, but there's so much other crazy stuff going on in the world that people aren't paying as much attention to TV at the moment. So do not panic, I would say. I don't think this means Flash is in trouble, nor is Arrow in trouble right now.
Yeah, I mean, we had a hurricane, we have an election, so we've had debates. So it's been kind of rough.
Yeah, there's another storm coming in on the West Coast this week right now. People are a little preoccupied, and let's not forget, CW is making these shows for free, available via their app directly after the episodes air. So if you miss the show like I did, let's talk about that for a second. Supergirl, if you had your DVR set to record Supergirl last year, it switched channels, and most likely your DVR did not pick up the new channel. So if you were like me and forgot to reset your DVRs, you didn't get the first episode recorded. But thanks to the CW app, I was able to go in and watch the episode and see it there. I think the same thing is going to happen to all the CW shows as they continue to give these shows away for free on the CW app. People are just going to watch it that way because there's a lot of cord cutters out there, and there's a lot of people that have other things going on in their lives. So that's just my two cents.
Right. So there was an interesting conversation on this. I think we touched on a little bit last week, actually, that the CW, that channel by and large, is designed to cater to a younger generation. A lot of the younger generation out there, they don't believe in cable to watch TV. They would rather legitimately download and purchase an episode, watch content on YouTube, or watch it online. So they're the younger group that has shifted to watching online, which I think is part of the reason CW built their app where you can watch these things for free, because a lot of these kids will pull it up on their cell phone or on their tablet on the go, and they'll watch bits and pieces, get some commercials, and be good. Now, it was on Hulu last season, the last 5 episodes, but I'm not sure how comparable those really are going to be, because you had to remember to go there. CW has promoted the ever-living crap out of the CW app. You see at least 3 different mentions of it coming in or out of commercial when you watch these shows. So I think your ratings dip is partially attributable to the fact that, hey, I'm watching it later. That's cool.
It is all their shows, and it is all the back catalogs of their shows. So everything that the CW owns is on that app. And I think that's a tremendous advantage. It's the start. That is how to get viewers, especially with Hulu not being free anymore. You have to pay for Hulu now. So
I didn't realize the back catalog was on there, because I thought they signed a deal with Netflix for the back catalog.
No, maybe. I just remember seeing some of the episodes from last year, and I thought they were all available.
Yeah, so I think it's the most 5 recent episodes is what they're doing on the app.
Okay. So they are doing the Hulu thing. Okay.
Yeah, because Legends of Tomorrow just came on Netflix. So if you wanted to get caught up on Legends of Tomorrow, you can do that. You can watch it on Netflix, and then you can watch the 5 most recent episodes on the app. So you can get caught up.
I'm totally fine with that. I'm not fine with having the shows available on paid Hulu and then having to have a Netflix. I'm sorry. It's just at some point in time, you have to cut what you are paying for. And that was going to be my line in the sand. I was never going to pay for Hulu. I know there's some great stuff on Hulu, but I pay for cable.
Right. And it was good timing on the move, because this was about the same time that Hulu dropped their free tier. There is no longer a free tier on Hulu like there used to be, which is what the CW shows. You could watch them under the free tier, but now that is gone.
Nevertheless, these ratings are something that we have watched throughout the past few years, and there's something that we will continue to watch for Arrow. Arrow was built to be about a 2 million per episode view. That's part of the reason why we've lost characters over the years, because they can't afford to pay them as much as they really should be paid. So that's why you see a transition in cast from year to year. And if they were making 20 million viewers per episode, then you'd have a little bit different monetary basis for your cast. But at 2 million, you have to be selective. And it's not, remember Friends? those guys were making $1 million per episode. So that's $6 million just for the six of them. And then you'd had additional characters on top of that. But they had the ratings to pull in that much money. CW doesn't. So we will keep our tabs on this. We will keep looking at it because ultimately it does matter, as we saw with Agent Carter and Constantine and all the other shows that have been canceled. So, Michelle, you actually have some good news, though.
Yes. So, more on ratings. Supergirl premiere rockets CW ratings to an 8-year high.
Woohoo!
Supergirl premiere got 3 million viewers and a 1.1 in the 18 to 49 demo rating. This episode is the most watched Monday night show on the CW since a 2008 episode of Gossip Girl. True on CBS, the season one finale drew in 6.1 million viewers and had a 1.3 rating in the 18 to 49 demo. But considering that it moved to the CW, keeping half of that is amazing. First off, this, a lot of people don't realize that the CW is not really available everywhere.
That's right.
That's another reason why I think they did the app, because it will actually reach more people. It's going to be interesting if the CW releases their numbers on that, because it would be great to know just how many more people, like, either just watch it for the first time, or I used it today to rewatch Arrow. So it'd be really interesting if they're going to release those numbers.
Yeah. If I don't know if they're going to be like Netflix, though, where Netflix is like, we don't need to share. All we know is they're good for us.
Yes, as we cut more movies and give you more TV shows.
Well, their Netflix's move is to move towards more original content, which I think is a smart move, but that's for a completely different show than this one.
Exactly.
So, next news story I had, let's talk Supergirl a little bit more. I know a lot of fans, myself included, kind of speculated, oh man, this crossover event, this is what they're going to use to unify the Flareverse. Well, yeah, that's not the case. Andrew Kreisberg came out and did some interviews and explaining how this crossover is going to work. And it's basically not for her entire world, but Kara will be traveling from her dimension to our dimension, our being the world the Flash, Arrow, and Legends live in. This was an interview, so they're not crossing over the worlds. They're just crossing Kara over into this universe for now. So it does not seem that we'll be getting a comprehensive, unified Flareverse.
I think it's a big mistake. So we're on a little bit odds there. I think they really needed to bring her in, especially with Barry's multiverse and ability to do this Flashpoint, whatever. They could have brought Supergirl universe in just like that, and everything would have been fine.
The characters there are too OP for the Flaro universe.
Maybe.
Well, you know what? This year was Flashpoint and its repercussions. Next year, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
That's true. And they did set up the way to do that in season two of Flash. I thought they were setting up Crisis right there. They didn't, but it could still happen.
Yep. It's still looking forward to some great things from Supergirl.
But you did mention Flashpoint, Michelle. I think we had a news story referring to Flashpoint. What do we have there?
Did Flashpoint create a future Legends of Tomorrow superhero? So there's something that happened in this week's Flash. I don't know if I should mention it. Can I do a spoiler warning?
I am already aware, so I'm not concerned about spoiler warnings. For anyone who has not yet watched Flash, feel free to take your headphones off for, say, 3 minutes.
Yes. All right. So in this week's Flash, Barry zips on over and has like a gab fest with Felicity. And at first she's like, oh, nothing's wrong. And then he's like, well, can I just check? And she's like, sure. And then he's like, beep, 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 beep on the computer. And all of a sudden this picture pops up. And it's a Diggle with a child. But it's not baby Sarah. It's a boy. And it's like, what? And so could Flashpoint have created John Diggle Jr., which we met on last season's Legends episode, Star City 2046? Could that, you know, be what happened? Could that be John Diggle Jr. in his lap in that picture?
He could potentially, but now I'm kind of bummed if it means that baby Sarah doesn't exist.
I know.
And then who's the mom? That's a big issue, too.
It's Moira. No, I don't know.
maybe it's, remember when Diggle went out with his sister-in-law?
No, bring her back from the first season.
I want it to be Layla. I really, really do. And I know they're bringing her back. So I know she's not dead, but it doesn't mean she's necessarily with Diggle.
if you do anything with Argus, you have to do it with her because they killed off the wall. So it's got to be Layla.
Or if Layla and Diggle never got divorced.
No.
That could be it, too. I don't know. It'll be interesting. They did say that Diggle would be the most impacted of the Arrow characters out of Flashpoint, and they are correct. Just a little bit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So a couple other news stories that we're not going to go into depth, but will be in the show notes. James Olsen will become a superhero, basically a little known superhero on Supergirl. So stay tuned for that. And then also, if you want more information on the most ambitious crossover yet, you can go check out the EW.com article as well. Moving on into Arrow cast and crew interviews. Chris, do you have anything from New York Comic Con?
I got one real quick story for you. We did tease a little bit of Constantine talk at the beginning of the show. So they were doing a panel at New York Comic Con for the upcoming Justice League Dark cartoon movie, in which John Constantine plays a major role, played by Matt Ryan, reprising his role from the Constantine series and his guest appearance on Arrow. During this panel, they were given a chance to ask questions to people that are sitting up there, and Ryan was asked if he's open to returning to Arrow. He said that this is the first time he's been free in a while, but in this crazy ride of acting, he's learned not to rule anything out. He said in terms of an Arrow return, he's open to it because, quote, I love the character, end quote. So get your conspiracy theories ready on how John Constantine might return. Start writing your fanfics right now about how John Constantine might return. I'm not saying that facetiously because I'm sure they exist and I'm sure there's some pretty good ideas out there because fanfic writers come up with some weird, interesting ideas that I think sometimes some writers might look at and go, ooh, that's really good, and reuse bits and pieces of.
I got a great idea. Constantine and Agent Carter will now star in a buddy Netflix series.
No. What'll happen is John Constantine will come into the Arrow Cave because there's no security in the Arrow Cave, so anybody can walk in. And he goes, really? This is how you're spending my money? Because somebody's got to be paying for all this.
That's true.
They're funded by Constantine. I love it.
This week, more so than any other week, I took a look around the Arrow Cave. It is still hurting from the ghosts. I mean, there's windows that are out, there's glass panes that are out, and there's lights that are not there that were there before.
Yeah, and they destroyed that central gas gratometer thing that Felicity needed. And then she went and she pulled an Ollie season one and lied to her boyfriend to get him to do the testy test on the raggedy rag.
I can't wait till she brings him a computer that has bolt holes in it.
Oh, man, that'd be fantastic.
Nice callback, right?
Well played, sir.
We have a voicemail. You guys ready to listen to that one?
Let's do it.
It's from Adam. Are we sure we want to do it?
Yeah.
Okay, Adam, here we go.
Hey guys, it's Adam calling in with feedback for this week's episode of Arrow. And overall, I liked it. Actually, I liked both of these first two episodes, especially with their increased focus on the action side of things, as opposed to focusing almost completely on the relationship drama like they did for most of last year. I like Church, and I like that they're keeping him around. I was afraid they were going to kill him off at the end of the episode, but he's almost what Brick could have and should have been back in season 3. As for the flashbacks, it's good to see Zelenka again, and I was a bit surprised that they did the whole twist with shooting all of the guys that were doing the ring the bell exercise with Oliver, especially since it seemed to me like it would make more sense as a teamwork thing too, though they did set it up that in the Bratva the only person you could trust is yourself, so it kind of makes sense. Surprised they tried to turn Ragman into a good guy at the end there. I'm not sure where they're going with that, and I'm not sure I want to know where they're going with that, but we'll see. Oh, and if he is a good guy, that won't last once he finds out what Felicity did with the whole nuke, but I'm glad that that is continuing to play into the storyline rather than just being forgotten. Another thing with the nukes is Diggle's whole storyline, and yeah, I think once he gets out of this mess, he'll be disillusioned and come back, and maybe take over for Oliver as being the team trainer, because He seems to be a lot better at it, just from his conversation with his new guy right before the mission started. Well, can't wait to hear what you guys think. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you very much, Adam, for that voicemail. We really appreciate that. Michelle, do you have anything that you picked out of that? Did you want to respond back to Mr. Black Adam?
Well, like we touched on earlier about how, yes, I think Ragman's going to be upset about Felicity, but I think they're going to have to, you know, really go back to the fact that it was Dark who pushed the button and Felicity saved as many people as she could.
That's true. But rational thought doesn't always come into play on some of that stuff. You can know that it's Dark's fault, but he'll still want to blame someone potentially. Hopefully that's not the case where he's like, oh, Felicity, and it all spawns into Ragman wants to kill Felicity, so Oliver has to kill Ragman and drama persists.
Mm-hmm. So thank you again very much, Adam. And if you want to catch us on our voicemail line, we'll say it later again, but right now it is 612-888-CAVE or 612-888-2283. And we love hearing from Adam. He's also on the network. He does a podcast with me called Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Long Box Edition. Matter of fact, we have a whole host of podcasts on the network, don't we, Chris?
That we do. There's a ton of stuff you can find over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And each week on this show, we try to highlight one other episode to kind of pique you guys' interest. Go check out some other stuff on the network because we do have some great content. And this week, I want to talk to you guys about the most recent episode of Game Life Balance US, episode 30, entitled Commercial Auditions and Gamer Stereotypes. Cody and John experiment with their podcast format a bit, with special focus on their recent Game Life Balance. Then Cody explains how commercial auditions and casting agencies work, and he and John discuss gamer stereotypes and how deeply they've permeated our culture. So you can find that over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. It's episode 30 of the Game Life Balance US podcast. And while you're there, feel free to check out any of the other great content that you can find on the Gunna Geek Network, GunnaGeekNetwork.com. But it is that time in the episode where we need to start wrapping things up and get ready for next week's episode, Arrow. So thank you everyone who did participate and watch over on Geeks.live in the chat room. Anyone who has downloaded and listened to the podcast or replayed the video on YouTube. You can download everything from our website over on GunnaGeekNetwork.com or StarlingTribune.com. Listen on Spreaker or get the replays on YouTube. We're trying to be everywhere, guys. So go check us out.
Definitely tell all your friends, all your other people that listen to podcasts. Tell other listeners that they can join us live on Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on Geeks.live. And I want to say thank you very much to our video editor, Chris, and all the fans of the show. And don't forget, after the show, we like to hang out with our listeners. And we're still figuring out how to bring you in for the rest of this season. So stay tuned on that. And we love talking about a variety of geeky topics, not just Arrow, as you just witnessed on this podcast. So we will keep that in mind for future episodes.
You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on Geeks.live. The next live show on the network is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Please go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. We appreciate it. Like us on Facebook and YouTube and badger us on Twitter. You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Well, you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us at 612-888-K. That's 612-888-2283. And remember, on Wednesdays when Arrow airs in the Eastern time zone, I tweet live over on the Starling Tribune Twitter feed.
So guys, it's been another great episode of the Starling Tribune, but it is going to wrap things up for this week. Do we have any last words before we sign off and open the hangout to our live listeners? Let's start with at Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Diggle's magic grenade throwing arm.
That's a big hashtag. How about at Michelle Ely?
Hashtag Constantine's magic money.
And I am at the Chris Farrell signing off with hashtag ring the bell. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.